Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. If you have been in Arizona any length of time and watched the news, you are familiar with the name Carrie Lake. She has been one of the best anchors here in the Valley for a very, very long time and decided to give up that career earlier this year, which made a lot of shockwaves through the industry with some of the things that happened. She joins us now. Carrie, first of all, it's great to talk to you again. It's been too long since we've talked.
That is true. I miss you, Mike, and hopefully we can talk more often in the future.
Well, yeah, you're going to be a little busy.
Never too busy for you, Mike. Never too busy for you.
Let's talk about your decision to leave the industry of broadcasting. You were on top of your game. You truly were still on top of your game when you decided to go. Can you just give a little bit of an explanation of why you decided to do that?
Well, I don't think it's any secret that the media has progressively been going more and more liberal, and there's been a bias in the media for a long time, and it was getting worse, and it got to be probably the worst it's ever been under President Trump, where rather than just covering him as a president, the media was on a mission to try to destroy him, his presidency, and everything that he stood for. So that, you know, that weighed heavy on me, and I always tried to be balanced as a news anchor when it came to covering President Trump. But with COVID, it just became, it went from being unethical, and it, to me, it felt very immoral. We were, all of the media was putting out COVID nonstop and just trying to scare people, I think, unnecessarily. We weren't putting out information that was balanced and that offered some advice to people about maybe how they could get through this and mitigate this. There were treatments out there that we're now learning are, in fact, you know, treatments that work, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, and we couldn't even mention those in the media. I mean, I remember putting out tweets on it, and one of the local, I don't even want to call them news outlets, newspapers, because I don't think they put out much news, wrote a hit piece on me for suggesting that we explore some of these inexpensive treatments. So it just got to the point where it was weighing on me really heavily. And you know, one of the Ten Commandments is thou shalt not lie. And I felt like a lot of what was being pushed in the media were lies or half-truths. And I just didn't want to be associated with that anymore.
Did you have an inkling that you were going to run for the governor's office or any political office when you left the industry?
No, absolutely not. I never considered running for office. I didn't even, actually, the first person to mention anything about politics to me, which is kind of funny, was Governor Ducey. He sent me a really nice message and just said, do I sense Lake 2022 in the future? And I was like, no, I don't think I'm going to go from the corrupt world of media to the corrupt world of politics. So running was not anything that I thought about, but immediately after I left, I was starting to get messages from former viewers in Arizona saying, hey, would you run for Senate? Have you thought about running for Senate? Maybe governor? I was out for a walk with my husband one night, and a couple people stopped their cars and rolled down their windows and talked to me and said, you really should give politics a try because we need somebody with integrity. And I kind of laughed it off, but then I had a few people who were in the world of politics or kind of associated with that who reached out to me and said, I think you really should consider this, Carrie. I think we need you. You've got name recognition. You're a conservative, and we could use you in the world of politics to help prevent the slide of Arizona into complete liberal lunacy and becoming California 2.0. So I had some discussions with my husband. I started looking into it, and people connected me with people in politics. I didn't know the first thing about getting into a political race, Mike. And it's, let me tell you, it is a tangled web and not easy. It probably should be made a little easier so that normal, everyday citizens can run for government without having to be part of the system or be part of the establishment. I mean, just trying to hire people in my campaign has been really tough because we want to keep this as pure. And don't laugh. I know we're going into politics, and purity doesn't normally kind of go hand in hand with politics. But we're trying to find people to work on my campaign who are truly America first, Arizona first, and don't have a past history of kind of being swamp creatures. And that's not an easy task.
When you decided to do this, you said you talked with your husband. You know that running for a political office is often much more hard on the family than it is on the person running because of some of the things that are going to be said. How is your family going to deal with that?
surprisingly, Mike, my kids, and I can't remember if you've met them before, but I know I've talked to you about them. My daughter just graduated from high school. My son's a senior. He's going to be a senior. So they're of the age where they're kind of self-sufficient, which is great. And thankfully, we've raised them conservative. So I've got that going for me. But they were the ones who said, Mom, you know, it doesn't matter what people write about you and say about you. We know the truth about you. We know who you are. And it only matters if you're canceled and it bothers you. If it doesn't bother you, then who cares? So I think they, by growing up in this generation where people are canceled, people are harassed daily, they kind of know how to mitigate or navigate that, I should say. My husband, on the other hand, I remember going to bed one night and I said, what do you think? I mean, once you go this direction, once you step in, you don't step out. You know, failure is not an option. Quitting is not an option. And he said, I don't think you should do it. I just think it's going to be too much, but let me sleep on it. And he woke up the next day, he went for a hike and he came home and he said, you know what? I think you should do this. You love Arizona. Your heart is in the right place. You've got the name recognition. And I think we should do this. So I'm getting choked up thinking about it because I remember it. I had just woken up and he came into the bedroom from his hike and said, remember what I said last night? I take that back. So my family's on board. It's not going to be easy. I think it was Steve Bannon who said, you're going to get punched in the face every single day. And I think I'm ready for that. I mean, I don't know that I'm ready for that, but you know, what the hell? What the hell? If we don't stand up, Mike, and do something big and take a strong, bold move, then what do we have in this future? You know, I think it was John Kennedy who said, if not us, who? If not now, when? And I made a sacrifice to leave television at the top of my game. We were number one in ratings. I walked away from a large sum of money and a lot of nice perks that come with that. But that is not really a sacrifice. I mean, and you know this more than anyone, Mike. You've lost a loved one on the battlefield. That is sacrifice. Mm-hmm. What our forefathers went through to bring this great country to fruition is sacrifice. And I think we are in a very special time in history where we need to stand up and do what's right. And I say that to anybody out there listening, whether you're working in journalism, we had another journalist yesterday peel off. And we need to start saying, look, I'm not going to give my time, my energy, my soul, my heart, my work to an unethical field, whether it's in medicine you're working in, if it's in business, if you're doing something unethical. This is the time for us to stand up and do what's right. We have to, or I feel we are in a really bad spot if we all don't start standing up and doing the right thing.
If people want to learn more about the campaign, if they want to jump on board or they want to learn about you, you have a website, where do they go to find you?
Thank you for asking, and I didn't even tell you to say that. You're just being nice. It's carrielake.com, K-A-R-I-L-A-K-E.com. And when you get there, if you support me or you think you support me, I would love it if you would sign on and get me on the ballot. You just need to fill out a few simple questions if you're a voter here in Arizona and sign the petition to get me on the ballot. We're trying to do this, and we're having great success so far, Mike. The people of Arizona are jumping in with me on this campaign, and we've gotten, I think, well over 3,000 signatures already, maybe 4,000 by now. We haven't paid for a single one. And what I'm learning is that most campaigns, or many of them, have to pay to get people to sign these petitions. And everybody so far has gone on and done it because they believe in this campaign. They believe in me to help lead Arizona into a very bright future.
Well, Carrie, it's great to talk with you again. And I wish you the best of luck. And I hope to have you on as this campaign moves forward and talk more about issues and what's happening and learn more from you.
Thanks, Mike. And hopefully we can get together and have that beer we were meaning to have.
Anytime. You just say when.
Okay. Thanks,
all right.
Mike.
Thanks, Carrie. All right. That's Carrie Lake. She was a former anchor here in town and honestly did leave at the top of her game and is now running for governor. Should be an interesting race. Coming up in just one moment, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the dumbest proposed bill in the history of the Congress, or at least in this session. We'll talk about that in just a moment.
strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. I have been pretty outspoken about the fact that I think the Vice President of the United States should have been at the border a long time ago, if for nothing else than the optics of being down there and seeing for herself what's happening and listening to the people that are working day in and day out on the southern border of the United States. But there is a bill being proposed by a Republican from Iowa. Her name is Ashley Hinson, that would prevent the Vice President from traveling. I want you to hear the explanation from Representative Hinson of what her bill would do.
Vice President Harris needs to see the crisis for herself and take action. And that is exactly what my See the Crisis Act will force her to do. This bill will prevent the Vice President from traveling internationally on the taxpayer's dime until she visits the southern border and reports back to the American people on how the administration will secure our border.
Let me explain why this is a huge waste of time and theater. Now, I want to be fair. I have pointed out many, many times the theater of the other side of the political aisle doing absolutely nothing and doing something for theater. First of all, no way this gets any traction within the House of Representatives with Nancy Pelosi as the Speaker of the House. So it's pure theater on its face. But by some miracle, if it were to get out of the House and get to the Senate, and by some miracle it were to pass in the Senate, it's got to be signed by the President of the United States. You think Joe Biden is going to sign that piece of paper? I understand her frustration. There's a story about how the vice president is going to meet the Dreamers on the 9th anniversary of the Dream Act. And what's frustrating about that for me is I will tell you that I feel for the Dreamers. It is a mistake of the American government. This is the biggest indicator that we have so much to fix when it comes to immigration are the Dreamers. They are the biggest example of the failings of our immigration system in America. No doubt about it. What's frustrating about this is while, again, and I'm telling you that what Ashley Hinson is doing in Iowa is theater. But it is the exact same kind of theater from the Vice President of the United States that's going to meet with the Dreamers while our policies are literally creating the next generation of Dreamers. What we are doing with opening the borders the way we are and allowing people in with hearings and giving people sponsor homes and all of the things that are happening right now is we are creating the next generation of Dreamers. We're creating an underclass. We have people that are coming here by the tens of thousands right now that are not entitled to live as Americans, but we're not throwing them out either. So they have residency here, but they don't. It's temporary. It is limbo until their court's cases are adjudicated when it comes to asylum. It, again, as I've said before, when 90%, statistically 90% of these asylum claims are deemed to be false. That means 10% are effective. Those 10% are waiting in the exact same long line for their asylum claims to be approved when they shouldn't be waiting this long. And that's the fault of the people that are coming here illegally, knowing that their claims are fraudulent. On top of that, it's the policies of this administration that are bringing in another wave of children that are going to be going to sponsor homes that are also now children without a country. How old are they going to be before we send them back to their home country or accept them as Americans? And we are creating the next generation of Dreamers. So while the Vice President of the United States is performing political theater by meeting with current Dreamers on the 9th anniversary of the Dream Act, they are doing nothing to solve the problem and creating the next generation of Dreamers. So every American should be upset. But a Face the Crisis Act or View the Crisis Act in the House of Representatives is nothing but political theater. It's going to accomplish nothing. In a moment, Dr. Michael Crow is going to join me. Dr. Crow, of course, heads up ASU, and they have come down with new rules for vaccinated and unvaccinated students returning to class in the fall. And it is making big waves, even a big response from the governor. So we talk with Dr. Crow next.
strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. A big news story this morning that when I started getting ready for the show was about ASU and their new policies about COVID-19 with vaccinated and unvaccinated students returning to campus. Joining us now is the president of ASU, Dr. Michael Crow. Dr. Crow, welcome back to the show. Let's start with this policy and where it started. A lot of pushback, especially from the governor's office. Were you surprised at the pushback?
Hey, Mike, nice to talk to you. A little bit, because I think there might be a little bit of confusion. You know, as you know, we've been open, driving forward. We're going to be fully open in the fall. We've chosen the path that most universities haven't chosen. Most have chosen full vaccination of all employees and all students. We're allowing freedom of choice. So we expect vaccinations. But if you don't get vaccinated, then you've got to follow CDC guidelines for institutions of higher education, which are quite clear, which is to protect the unvaccinated. We still will keep our policies for testing and health check and stuff like that. And so we're not really changing anything other than we're saying, get vaccinated. And if you're not going to be vaccinated, then we're going to have the same policy going forward, which then allows us to be fully open. So that's really what we're doing.
Don't you think that being tested twice a week, daily health reports, masks everywhere on campus for people that either don't show their status or aren't vaccinated, don't you think that's a little bit strict and outside of what the CDC has been saying is necessary, especially outdoors?
Well, that's certainly my hope. I mean, I don't think we're going to end up there by the time we get there. We're trying to make the best guess of, if you're not vaccinated, sort of the worst case that it could be. I don't think we're going to end up in that particular position. But right now we're just going with the CDC guidelines. We think that those will loosen. We think they'll loosen even dramatically if things move in the right direction. So, yeah, I mean, it seems a little complex, but it's no different than our present policy. We have daily health checks now. We have random vaccinations now. We have masking now. So what we're doing is, we are moving to, we're one of the only universities moving to, full opening without vaccine requirement.
Are there going to be any exceptions for the masks for unvaccinated people, such as religious exemptions or other things of that nature?
Sure. We do have other vaccines that are required now and have been required for decades, the MMR vaccine and so forth. And there are exceptions. Personal exceptions, religious exceptions, and so forth, medical exceptions, absolutely.
How do you enforce this? How do you know which students have been vaccinated and which haven't once they're on campus, the masked versus the unmasked? How do you know that student in a classroom hasn't been vaccinated or has been?
Well, we think we have huge numbers of people already vaccinated, so we're not really seeing this as a big issue. And, people live by a code of conduct within our institution. So my hope is that the CDC guidelines will loosen up and that's what we're trying to follow. And that most people will get vaccinated and we'll be fine. That's our projection is that we're going to be fine. What this is just saying there's sort of two categories. You're vaccinated and you don't need to do this, and you're not vaccinated, then you have to keep doing what we've been doing. So there's nothing new to this at all.
Yeah, except
and in fact, as you know, we've talked about before, Mike. We've been the institution that's really implemented, going forward, staying open, keeping working, and we've been at this for more than a year, and it's worked.
Well, the governor pushed back pretty hard, saying that this policy is just too much. That even the Biden administration mm-hmm. has been more flexible on this. So where do you stand with this comments from the governor?
Well, I mean, I think, there is a national Biden administration policy, but we're looking at the CDC policy specific to institutions for higher education. Here's the difference. So we're going to be bringing in students from all 50 states. We're going to be bringing in students from 130 countries, all gathered at one point in one time in one place. And so this is our best defense to the reignition of the spread, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's sort of national guidelines, and there's specific guidelines for institutions of higher education. And so we decided just to follow those guidelines for those being one of the institutions not requiring vaccinations.
When you take into account, or does this policy take into account the number of people that have had COVID-19 and have recovered? They don't have the vaccine, but they built up the antibodies because they've recovered from COVID-19. How do you account for those students?
Well, we could give those students an antibody test. So that's a good point. And we think that we're, you know, accelerating rapidly towards a good condition moving forward. I mean, we have seen the spread decrease, but, you know, it's still there. We're concerned about the reassembly. I think that we're going to be in pretty good shape for the fall. Most people are going to be vaccinated. Hopefully the masking requirements can be reduced because the spread has reduced. I think we're going to be in pretty good shape, and we're confident that we can have a very successful semester.
So do you believe that between now and the fall that this policy might be revised based on CDC data and maybe be less restrictive?
It's certainly moving in that direction. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Have you had any inquiries or any conversations with people from the student body and how they're receiving this? I'll be honest. I've had three or four ASU students reach out to me since this story broke, saying that they hate this. They hate the idea that they have to divulge vaccinations or they have to wear masks on campus. And I've not really had that much of feedback from people that quickly. So it seems to me there's a lot of people that are upset about this.
You know, we sent out 100,000. We sent this message to 100,000 people. We got a couple dozen responses. Some people were upset, but you know, we haven't gotten huge pushback because this is the present policy. So we're maintaining the present policy for unvaccinated and moving into a different policy for those that are vaccinated. Now, the good news is we have huge numbers of our staff have been vaccinated. Lots of our students have been vaccinated. We think that things are moving in the right direction. And so the other thing we have to do here, Mike, that makes this a little bit more complicated is that we have to send out messages now for something that's 2 months away. We think everything's moving in the right direction, but because students are traveling from all over the world, because people are making these decisions, because, you know, and so forth and so on, it just means we have to put out messages way in advance of when we know where we're actually going to be. So I think that the students that are concerned, you know, we're not trying to invade anyone's privacy. They're already telling us, you know, they're already vaccinated for certain other things and so forth and so on. We think we can make this work. We've been making it work. We can continue to make it work. And I think things are going to get better.
The governor says that he's going to issue an executive order that's preventing you from implementing this policy. And he's going to ask the legislature to pass a law and make it permanent that it can't be done. Will you fight that if that happens?
Well, I don't know what that would entail because, you know, I guess it would overrule the CDC guidelines. And so that's basically what we've been following since the beginning of this as best as we can. And it's been relatively effective. And so I think what happened here was some people felt that we were requiring vaccinations initially, which we weren't. And that made them upset. And then they looked at, well, then you have to maintain this policy if you're not vaccinated. And I think that's just gotten some people very upset, and hopefully they'll take a closer look at it.
Yeah, but didn't you have a meeting with the governor and discuss this with him, and they said that it really wasn't a policy that was going to work when you talked with him?
Well, I had a meeting with him last week, and what I said was, you know, was that we were going to implement the CDC, and he said he didn't know how it would work in terms of masking and so forth and so on. And I said, yeah, we're trying to work this out as we go. I mean, we're trying to figure out how to react to the CDC. We're trying to figure out how to protect people that are not vaccinated. Imagine now, you know, we're not the same as a public school, or we're not the same as the local Circle K. You know, we have people arriving at the university, tens of thousands of people from all over the country and all over the world. And that's why the CDC puts out special rules for institutions of higher education. We also have 18,000 to 20,000 people living in close proximity with each other who are coming in from all over the world. And so we're working hard to not become a new source for the spread of the virus in any of its new variants that are still occurring. So that's why the CDC has separate guidelines for universities.
Well, Dr. Crow, I know this has probably turned into a controversy you weren't going to expect. I appreciate you coming on and talking about this, and look forward to seeing how it ends up by the time the fall gets here.
Oh, I appreciate the questions, Mike, and just rest assured that we're working at it. We're trying to do the best that we can. You know, we're giving everybody their freedom of choice, and we're trying to then keep everybody that's not vaccinated also safe. And so it's not an easy equation that we're working on here.
Yeah, I know it's not. A lot of moving parts. So I appreciate the time this morning.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
All right. That is Dr. Michael Crow, the ASU president, defending the policies as they stand, but saying they could change with the CDC guidelines as we get better and better with results in COVID-19. So more reaction to this. We'll kind of review some of the things that the doctor said coming up here in just a moment.
Strong. strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, if you know a Remarkable Valley teacher deserving of a $2,500 check, we've got a great program here. Just text the word teacher to 411-923 and nominate a teacher today for a pay tribute to a teacher program that's happening. We give a teacher a $2,500 check for the great job that they do, but you get to nominate that teacher. Text the word teacher to 411-923. Pay tribute to a teacher presented by your Valley Toyota dealers. So Dr. Michael Crow was just on with me for a few moments, pointing out that they are following guidelines and guidance from the CDC. Now, I don't know. He said it's different for universities. He's more of an expert than I am. But what we've heard, everything we've heard from the CDC is saying that masks are ineffective. I shouldn't say ineffective, or unnecessary outdoors. And that data has been that way for a long time, but skewed. And so they've gone away from masks at all outdoors. But in this case, testing people twice a week, I don't know who's going to pay for those things. But what's most interesting about this is that I know that there has been a very good relationship between Dr. Crow and the governor's office. So for the two sides to be on opposite sides of this, there's pretty strong feelings on both. When the governor's office comes out and publicly says, we are going to make sure this is not implemented, this is not the right thing to do, it does seem to me to be punitive. And it seems like you are saying to students, we can't force you to get vaccinated, but we can make your life hell unless you do, until you do. And I don't think that that's necessarily fair. If this were a private university, it's different. You know, it's a private business. But this is a land-grant university paid for by the tax dollars of the Arizona taxpayers. And I personally think it's a bit intrusive that people are smart enough to know. The one question I did ask Dr. Crow about was about people that have already had COVID-19, because that age group, you know, college kids, usually 18 to 22 years old. So some of them fall into that under 20 category. But the 20 to 44 year old age group is the age group of people that are getting and spreading COVID-19 at the highest rate still. And they are not being hospitalized at a very high rate. As a matter of fact, it is a very low rate of hospitalization, and an almost 0% chance of death in that age group. So they are not susceptible to serious illness or death. But what about the people that have had it? And how do they get an ease? We might be able to give them an antibodies test and then exempt them. But is this going to get in the way of progress? And the doctor was very candid in saying that as the guidelines shift and morph, we'll change our policies. And we're moving in that direction, so we think that it's going to change before the school starts. It sounds like, to me, Dr. Crow, who I admire, I think the world of Dr. Crow, I think they've done a fabulous job at Arizona State University. But I think in this case, the policy is going to need to change because the student body, and largely, I know that they're young adults, but largely the parents that are paying for college or in that regard that are involved in their students' life, they're not going to stand for this when the rest of the world is opening up. If you look at what's happening everywhere else, and I will concede, he makes a good point. When you say you've got people gathering from all over the world, that does add an element to me, which I hadn't considered. It's not just Arizona kids on these campuses like you see in a public school classroom. These are kids from all over the country and all over the world that are congregating in one place. So I will concede that that does add a different level to it. But everything we've seen is people opening up. The airline industry is opening up. Now, you got to wear a mask on an airplane. But we're seeing things, restrictions be lifted in places all over the country and all over the world. I think for most people, it feels like they're forcing the vaccination on people because they're going to make your life so uncomfortable if you're not vaccinated that you'll relent. And I don't want to put words in people's mouths. I'm saying that's the perception. That's the way it appears. Dr. Crow has been very reasonable. I think he does an excellent job at ASU. I just think that this policy seems a bit restrictive and even punitive. But he did leave the door open saying as things change with COVID-19 and with what's happening in the CDC guidelines, as those change, so will this policy. And it may even change before the start of the fall semester. They put that letter out just warning people what was coming. So it was an interesting conversation. It'll be up on the podcast later. And, you know, the governor's office is talking about an executive order, which may make this a moot point. But what will it do to ASU, NAU, these other institutions of higher learning? That also remains to be seen. So we've reached out to the governor's office for a comment. And so we'll see what happens from the governor's office. But it is it's interesting to see the two sides of this. And where they stand. So we'll talk more about this, I'm sure, as the show goes on. We're going to talk about the economy in a moment. Prices are surging. Your utility bills may be going up. And a lot of it has to do with policies, which we've talked about at great lengths. But more specifics on where you could be paying more and why in the very near future. All of that is coming up in the next hour of the show. So I hope you'll stick around for it. We'll do it next.